as we all know, is the month of Geula, the month of Yeshua. And we are mispoiled that indeed, even before Pesach, we should be zocha to a Geula Shlema. And this is the month of all the months of the year that is the most misugal for Bias HaMashiach and for Yeshua's, for Klal Yisrael. We are in Perek Vav, and today we're going to look at a few psukim that are very, very famous. These are very well known. These are well known even in non-Jewish culture. Countless generations of parents, going back to the Puritans, have always used this tochacha to their children. And that is Perek Vav, Pasuk Vav. Leich el namala otzel. Go to the ant, lazy one. Or the King James translation, go to the ant, thou sluggard. Re'ei drachecha v'chakam. Contemplate her ways and become wise. And the basic idea here is really a teaching of Chazal, that Chazal say that even if the Torah would not have been given at all, we could learn many midos tovos from the behavior of animals. We would learn loyalty from a dog. A dog is very, very loyal and devoted. Not a cat. But a cat gets another credit. A cat, we learn tsnius, we learn modesty from a cat. Cats are, you know, private, and whenever they do whatever they have to do, they do it privately, so to speak. So we learn different midos. In fact, you know, there's a Perek Shira. Many of you might say Perek Shira. Perek Shira is a collection. It goes all the way back from the Tanaim of the Mishnah, in which every different type of animal is said to praise Hashem with certain psukim. Right? This is the pasuk of the dog. This is the pasuk of the rat. This is the pasuk of the scorpion. They all have a pasuk. And the way you understand this in a deeper level, it's not that the animal actually recites a pasuk. Animals don't really know Hebrew. They don't say the words. But rather, by their very life, they are singing a song of praise to God. That's not true for the human being, because human beings have bechira. We have free will. So the mere fact that we're living is not in itself a praise of God. It depends on how we live. But the animal is acting under its instincts, under the nature that Hashem gave it. So when the animal is living its life, it is by definition doing the will of Hashem, because it does not have bechira to rebel against Hashem. And therefore the animal's very life is a glory to Hashem in a way that a human is not, unless we exercise our koach of bechira. So when Perek Shira says that the dog says this pasuk and the lion says this pasuk, it does not refer to a specific verbalization of those words, but rather the idea in that pasuk is exemplified, is shown by the way the animal lives its life. So for example, just remember the pasuk for a dog. What do dogs say? So dogs say, the pasuk, bo nishtachaveh v'nichra'a nivrecha lifnei Hashem Elokeinu. Let us go and bend our knees and bow in front of Hashem our God. This is actually a pasuk from the Kabbalah Shabbos Tehillim. Now that doesn't mean the dog says those words, but it means the way the dog lives its life with such loyalty and devotion and obedience, it expresses the notion of submission to a master. Submission, and therefore we learn from the dog how to submit to a master, namely how to submit to the Ribono Shel Olam and the like. Right? So as a result, you know, there's all Shaila, in fact there's all interesting sociological speculation. Why do so few religious Jews own dogs? It's an interesting question. One can have a dion on it. Some have said because historically, dogs were often used, the Nazis, but even much, much earlier than the Nazis, as beasts of attack that would maul and hurt Jewish people. So there's kind of almost an instinctual fear. But I don't mean just from the Nazis. Going back to the pirates of Poland and the like, they would sick their dogs. But be it as it may, Chazal do say that we learn much from the animals, and this includes kosher as well as non-kosher animals. And here, Shlomo HaMelech takes this one step further. Not only do we learn from the more developed animals, but we even learn qualities and midot from the ants. Ants meaning A-N-T, I say ants, so there's no way you'd confuse it, but some people don't speak English properly and they say ants, so I need to clarify that. Okay. Now, what do you learn from the ants exactly? So the Gra brings an interesting medrash. The Gra says that in Avodas Hashem, there are three qualities that we have to have. We have to have what is called Chachma. Now, Chachma here is both a combination of basic Torah knowledge, but it also means the common sense of knowing what is right or wrong. That's a very, very important element. You know, the Chazon Ish used to call this the fifth chelek of Shulchan Aruch. Now, there are only four portions of the Shulchan Aruch. What is the fifth chelek? The fifth chelek is common sense. Common sense is, which is really not so common at all, it's kind of a unique quantity. But common sense is the sense of knowing when one should be strict, when should one be mekel, how do you balance different obligations. Kavod Abrios, for example, there is a halacha, but sometimes for Kavod Abrios, not to humiliate somebody, the halacha itself says you can do something that's sometimes a violation in order for Kavod Abrios. But that's only sometimes, that's not all the time. So one can't just say, oh, I want to make people feel good, so, you know, I'll do this and that. I'll go with them to a non-kosher restaurant. You know, you can't do that. So Chachma is the idea of understanding how to balance things, right? There's Kavod Abrios, there's Halacha, there's being Makariv people, there's the need to have distance and boundaries. Right? So Chachma is the intellectual component where a person is capable of thinking different situations out to understand what is the right response, what is the wrong response. Sometimes a person could be 100% correct from a legalistic halachic standpoint, but he's doing something totally incorrect. It's totally connected the Ratzon Hashem. I mean, there are examples where Chazal actually matured prohibitions because they saw it as necessary for the survival of Am Yisrael. For example, the writing down of the Torah Shebal Peh. You know, originally things like the Mishnah and the Gemara were not supposed to be written down, because Hashem wanted the interpretation of the written Torah to be handed down from Rebbe to student, parent to child, and it was not supposed to be written down. Devarim Shebal Peh, I Atar Rashoi Lakosvan. You're not allowed to write it down. Elamai. So why was the Mishnah written down and later the Gemara written down? Because Chazal saw that as the generations were getting lower and lower, there was a tremendous danger that the Torah Shebal Peh would have been forgotten. So what did they say? They applied a pasuk in Tehillim, Eis Lasos Lashem, when it is a time to stand up for Hashem's glory, Heferu Torasecha, you even annul the Torah. Now, this is a dangerous notion, obviously. We can't make these judgments. I mean, otherwise you come to the philosophy of reform. To get people to shul, you know, let's allow driving, to encourage Jews that are far, let's make intermarried couples, you know, full-fledged members. So obviously, this is something only the greatest, greatest, greatest Gedolim do. But to some degree, there is always the notion of balancing, meaning to say, one has to balance. When the Torah has two different objectives, Chachma gives you the ability to balance. It is what the Chazon Ish called the fifth chelek of the Shulchan Aruch. Of course, in that connection, it reminds me a little bit that slightly different twist, that the Chassam Sefer much earlier made a similar point, that when he gave a Talmud Smicha, he tested the Talmud on the four chalakim of Shulchan Aruch, but then said to the Talmud, I need to know if you know the fifth chalak of Shulchan Aruch. So the Talmud said, what's that? He says, how to get along with people. That's the fifth chalak. It's very important for a Rav to know how to get along with people. So the Talmud said, I absolutely learned that. I know I get along with people. It's fine. So the Talmud took a position, and almost immediately he got into stormy machloksim with like everybody in the Kehillah, and he got fired, and he went to the Chassam Sofer to complain and to ask for another position. And the Chassam Sofer said, I thought you said you learned the fifth chelik of Shulchan Aruch. He says, I did, but that's about how to get along with people. These aren't people. Okay. He says, that you need already. The sixth chelik of Shulchan Aruch, how to get along with people that aren't people, that's already another chachma. But the Chazon Ish didn't say, he didn't limit the idea to getting along with people, though that's part of it, but this is called the fifth chelik of the Shulchan Aruch. So that's the first quality that you need in Avodas Hashem, chachma. Chachma is so number one, it's a base of knowledge, but also the ability to understand when do you do this, when do you do this. The second that you need is midos. A person needs midos tovos. Without midos tovos, in fact, the way it's often described, the way the Rambam describes it, in his introduction to Pirkei Avos, which is called the Shmona Perakim, it's actually very interesting. Pirkei Avos itself is five chapters of Mishnah and one chapter of Braisa, supplementary teaching. The Rambam's introduction is eight chapters. So the Rambam's introduction to Pirkei Avos is larger or more chapters than Pirkei Avos itself. But the Shmona Perakim is a very, very important work of Jewish ethics. The Rambam deals with many, many questions in the Shmona Perakim. But one of the beautiful things that he says that midos ra'os are a mechitza between man and God, between the human being and God. Bad midos literally create a wall of separation. You can be brilliant. You can know the whole Torah. You can know everything. But you are not connected to Hashem if there are midos ra'os in a personality. One has to strive to work on those midos. Now, you recall, we learned elsewhere that some good midos we are born with, and some midos we might have a natural inclination on the negative side, and we have to consciously work to overcome them. And then they become our midos. But the Vilna Gaon gave us some very bad news. The Vilna Gaon gave us a message earlier that if one does not work on improving the midos that need to be improved, they will lose even the good midos that were given to them naturally. Meaning a person might be born b'teva as an easygoing person. Now there's some people, by nature, they don't get excited, they don't get angry. Now that's a wonderful quality. Now you're not going to get reward for that, by the way. You don't get reward for what comes to you naturally. But nevertheless, it's a wonderful, wonderful quality to have. But let's say the person has another bad midah, such as he's easygoing, but he's stingy. Like he doesn't, even though you might think it's a little inconsistent, but a person might say, nothing bothers me, including the fact that you're suffering. Nothing bothers me. I'm easygoing. Right? But I don't care about somebody else. So the Gra is actually saying, paradoxically, if the person doesn't work on his cruelty to become a kinder person, he's going to lose his easygoing nature as well. The Vilna Gaon's lashon was, you'll recall, that the midos are like pearls that are strung on a string. Once the string unravels and one pearl falls off, then all the pearls are going to fall off, even the ones that are in the middle that seem to be far away from the end. So that's midos tovos, right? So the first quality, again, it's not the Gra doesn't say in any particular order, but three qualities. Chachma, which we'll call knowledge plus discrimination, the ability to understand different situations. The second is midos tovos. And the third is masim tova, meaning it's not enough to have good midos and wisdom. You have to then carry it out in the actual way that you live your life. To do mitzvos, to do masim tovim, to do acts of chesed. Right? So these are our three. Chachma, midos, masim tovim. So the Medrash tells us, the Gra says, that from the namala, from the namala, from the lowly little ant, we actually learn examples of all three qualities. Chachma. So he brings a medrash that when ants, again, I'm not sure, I've seen it myself this way, but when ants dig their ant holes where they store their food and their grain, they actually, at least in some places, they actually dig three holes. A hole, and then a middle hole, and then a, like a three-story ant chamber, and they keep the grain in the middle chamber, because the bottom chamber might get flooded with subterranean water, and the upper chamber might get flooded with rainwater, etc. So they specifically insulate, this is chachma, they insulate the middle chamber from damage. Yeah. That is a good question. In fact, bees are very remarkable. Bees are very, very remarkable creatures, and that's a very good question. Why Shlomo did not want to use bees as an example? One example might be because bees also can hurt you with stinging, and he didn't want to use a stinger as an example. Although there are ants, that actually have, red ants can actually bite you as well, but the normal ants does not attack you. So maybe he Bedafka didn't want to use a mazik as an example, but you're right. Bees are absolutely very, very remarkable. In fact, I don't know if it's gotten a little better, but over the past few years, there's a great shortage of bees. Bees are dying out, and you might think, oh, big deal, but you know this is very, very dramatic. If you get too few bees, then nothing grows, no fruit grows, etc. It could actually be absolutely devastating. Yeah.
To let you all know that dandelions are necessary for bees. Don't pick them out of your gardens.
Okay.
It's just written on Facebook.
Okay. Well, no, that's very good. We need to stand up for bees because they are in fact important. But Shlomo uses the ant. So the ant demonstrates chachma, number one. Now, what about masim tovim? Well, he says that's the industriousness. He says that the Gemara says this lashon. The Gemara says that an average ant only eats a grain and a half a year, you know, a very little amount, and yet they find in these ant holes like tons of grain that gets stored up, so it does much more than it needs for itself, because essentially it is gathering for the tribe, for everybody, all the different ants. So that's an example of masim tovim, where you don't simply live for yourself, but you gather for everybody. Now again, we're not saying the ant is going to get rewarded in Olam Haba for this. This is the instinct. But by looking at the instincts that Hashem put into the biological world, we can learn how we should behave as well. And finally, the ant demonstrates midos tovos. Why is that so? Because ants do not steal from other colonies. It said, again, he brings a medrash that says that the ants once saw some grain that was lying around, and they went and they smelled it, and they saw that it belonged to some other ant colony, and they would not touch it. And that's midos tovos, in which you don't try to take away something that belongs to someone else. Yeah.
I know when I taught all these things about what animals do, we talked about instincts, but there's another word for it in the Yiddish type, other than instinct, or the...
Well, I think we would say teva is the normal word we would use, the teva. Kadosh Baruch Hu hitbia et teva into the animal to have to act a certain way. Yeah. By the way, I do want to say though, you know, I mentioned that Chazal themselves say dogs exemplify loyalty. The Marsha says, amazingly enough, that even the word kelev is kalev. He's attached to the heart of his master. But they had a recent experiment, not so good. They kind of, you know, they had a thing where people fainted. They were walking their dogs, and they fainted. So would the dog come to them, or the dog would just keep on going? So they said that most dogs just kept on going. You know, master fainted, the dog just kept on doing whatever it was doing. So some wanted to answer, well, that's because the dog knew you were faking it, meaning if you really fainted. But they had, so obviously you can't predict that, but there was one case where somebody really fainted and the dog still went on going, so you know, so we don't know. So it's, maybe it's niskatnu hadoros even with kolovim. But okay. But those are the three things we learn from the end. We learn chachma, we learn mitos, we learn masim tovim, and of course, the chachma is the three stories ants colony, and the mitos is it does not touch the other's chelek, and the masim tovim is the concern for all of the ants, not just thinking about itself. But the truth of the matter is, it's interesting that the one thing the Gemara does not mention, maybe because it's obvious, is the thing that is beferish in the pasuk, and that is that the ant is roeh et hanolad. Right? Pirkei Avos says, "Ezeu ashir." I'm sorry, "Ezeu chacham," who is a wise person. Haroeh es hanolad. One opinion says, "Halom made me kol adam." Another says, "Roeh es hanolad." Roeh es hanolad means they see the future consequences of their actions. Meaning before they do something, they try to anticipate what this will do. In fact, this is a very important idea. Sometimes we get angry and we say harsh words because we just can't control ourselves. But if we would think about the future consequences, we would think twice. In fact, yesterday's Parsha was about Saras. Saras comes from Lashon Hara. And part of why the Metzora is isolated is that he needs to feel that his words cause division, divisiveness, machlokas. He needs to experience the pain that he caused. And that will cause him to do tshuva. You know, the old English saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me, is not true, because very often the sticks and stones that break bones, it's not good to have broken bones, but most of the time, the broken bones heal. But the names, the embarrassments, the humiliation, they can remain with the person literally their entire life. I mean, I read sometimes the letters in Mishpacha magazine or whatever it is, women who are grandmothers talk about a high school teacher that did something to them that they have not recovered from. Nixon was giving an interview after he left the presidency, and he was talking. He was a person like who went through like every possible thing a person can go through. He was talking about the insults in sixth grade that kind of that he still who knows? But be it as it may, that's Roeh es hanolad. So really, what Shlomo HaMelech explicitly says is that the ant gathers in the summer what it will need, the spring and the summer, what it will need in the winter. So the chachma of the ant is literally roeh es hanolad. It doesn't simply say, oh, there's so much food now, there'll be plenty of food later. But somehow, instinctually, it understands there's food now, there won't be food later. I got a chaparai and I got to take advantage of what is here. So I would add this maybe as a component of chachma, although the chachma the Gra is talking about is the chachma of the three stories, of planning, etc. But it would also include the basic idea of roeh es hanolad. And then it goes on and says that there's something else great about the ant. Not only is it wise, and not only is it industrious, and not only is it respectful of the property rights of other ants, but there's not even a boss. Asher ein la, katzin, shoter, umoshel. The ants do this. Now these are three words for leaders. I'll explain the Vilna Gaon will differentiate, but just simple pshat for a moment. That the ants, now maybe I'm thinking, maybe that's why the bees are different, because the bees have the queen bee. And Shlomo HaMelech wants to make a point that there's no particular head. The ants are communists, so to speak, meaning to say, or anarchists. Meaning they work without leadership, they work without structure. Everybody just does the right thing without somebody standing over them, demanding that they behave a certain way. Now here, the Gra has a little digression in which he explains that why does Shlomo HaMelech use three terms for leadership? Katzin, Shoter, Moshel. So he says it actually corresponds to the three ideas of Chachma, midos and masim tovim. He says, a katsin, which means a ruler, but katsin, he doesn't really bring a proof for it, but he just asserts that katsin is a Rebbe that teaches Torah. So therefore, the katsin is the source of chachma, of your wisdom, to be able to understand how to live your life. He says a shoter is like a policeman, right? An enforcer. That's the person that makes you do what you have to do. In other words, if you have a duty, if you have an obligation to pay your taxes, if you have an obligation to burn your chametz, right? In a time when we had a beis din that would enforce, the shoter would be sure that you did it. So therefore, the shoter is the one that forces people to do the masim tovim that they would otherwise neglect. So the katsin is connected to chachma. The shoter is connected to masim tovim because the shoter forces people to do masim tovim. And he says the moshel is the one that is kind of the negative. It's also kind of a police force, but the moshel is the ruler that prevents people from taking advantage of others. So the shoter, in this imagery, is the one that makes you do masim tovim. The moshel is the one that holds you back from avel, from crookedness and perversity and cheating, and that goes back to developing midas tovos in bein adam lechaveira. And therefore, the Shlomo HaMelech is saying is, not only is the ant great in Chachma and Midos and Masim Tovim, but in each of those three things, there is no Katsin, Shoter, Moshe. He then adds with Derech Drush, very, very beautifully, that you see this threefold description about Eliezer. Eliezer is Avraham's faithful servant. And Eliezer is described, right, when Abraham made Eliezer swear that he would find a wife for Yitzchak. So the Torah describes Eliezer this way. Avdo, Zakan Beiso, he is his Eved, he is the elder of his house, he is Moshel, B'chol Asher Lo. So the Gra wants to say, Avdo means he was Avraham's enforcer. He was the shoter. That if people had to do something, Eliezer made sure they did it. Zakan Beiso is a teacher of Chachma, because Zakan does not mean old, but Zakana Chachma, the person that acquired Chachma. And Moshel is the same word that's used here. He is the one that prevented the injustice of Midos Rose by fostering Shalom and the like. So Eliezer had all of those three. And then he goes on and he adds B'derech Drush that at the Bris Ben Absarim, at the covenant of the parts, which is very important for Pesach, that is when Hashem told Avram that your children will be enslaved in a land that is not theirs. So Avram said, what are you giving me, Hashem, if I go without children? Uben Meshek Beisi, Ben Meshek, the one who sustains my household, is going to inherit me. Now that means Eliezer. Ben Meshek, basically. But Meshek is an unusual word. We translate it as the one that manages my house. The Vilna Gaon says, Meshek is Rosh Tevos. Moshel, Shoter, Katsin. Moshel, Shoter, Katsin. That's Meshek. So the Torah uses abbreviations. It's almost like a Hasidish vort that the Vilna Gaon says. Okay. Right, so this is the greatness. The greatness is that not only does the ant do good things, but it doesn't have any boss that's making it do the good thing. Now, of course, obviously, it's because that's its teva. But take Musser. Do good things not because you have a teacher or a parent that's yelling at you or screaming at you. Do good things because you're supposed to do good things. Chachma and Midos and Masim Tovim. And that's really the goal. In fact, that's the great sakana. If a child does not develop an internal sense of living a life in accordance with the Ratzon Hashem, and the child is only doing so because parents are forcing, then what's going to happen when the child is old enough? They're not scared of their parents, or they just leave the house. What's going to be? So obviously a person has to internalize a sense of midos, because that will carry them through when they become independent. Okay. Yeah.
Katsin, does he have any proof?
I don't think he has a proof. He just says, Katsin hu b'chachma, Shalomei Torah Barabim Umore Harab Yisrael. I don't see any proof that he brings at all.
I missed something when you said that the
Antwoet
Anolata.
Yeah. No, the answer is that's because it prepares, that's the next pasuk really. It prepares in the Kayetz what it will need in the Choreth.
Yeah, but nowhere does it say.
No, it doesn't say the word Roeth Anolata. No. I meant to say that the Midah of preparing now for what you'll need later is the Midah of Roeth Anolata. No, it doesn't say Roeth Anolata. Okay, and that's what Pasuk Hei says. Tochin, again continuing the ant, Tochin Bakayetz Lachma Agra Bakotzir Ma'achala. So first, you need to know this. Let's identify seasons for a moment. And that is, the katsir and the kayetz. Katsir means the harvest. Now, kayetz we translate as summer, and it is summer, but kayetz does not mean summer. Kayetz actually means the drying out of figs. But basically, the season of katsir, going with Eretz Yisrael generally, is essentially from Pesach to Shavuos. Right, this is called Pesach. One of the things is called, this is called Chodesh Aviv, and Pesach, one of the names of Pesach is Chag Aviv. Shavuos is one of the names of Shavuos is Chag HaKotzir, and the way it basically works is barley ripens earlier than wheat, and the barley harvest is around Pesach time. And that is why the Torah says that the new barley, I know you heard Hoshea sharing this before, the new barley is brought on the second day of Pesach, which is called the Omer offering, and that allows us to eat the new grain. In the time of the Beis HaMikdash, we could not eat the new grain till we brought the barley offering that was known as the Omer. Until then, it is Chadash. Today, we don't have the Korban HaOmer, so the Torah basically says it is the passage of the day. So when the 16th of Nisan passes, you can then eat the new grain. The Isra of Chodesh still applies. Now in Chutz La'aretz, there's a huge, huge machlokas if the Isra of Chodesh applies to grain that grows in Chutz La'aretz. Most people traditionally were Mekel, because that's the Ramah's opinion, that you could be Mekel on Chodesh in Chutz La'aretz. But Kama Poskim actually said to be Machmer, and the tendency among B'nai Torah, L'chol HaPachos, is to be Machmer on Chodesh, even in Chutz La'aretz. But some people are still Mekel. In fact, the mainstream Hashgachos in America, the OU and the like, they're not Machmer. In other words, they'll certify as kosher things that are Chadash. Of course, all Chadash becomes Yashan. I mean, every Chadash will become Yashan after that particular day. But I want to make a point that some people get confused. Some people do get confused, and that is, grain that grows in Eretz Yisrael, there is no machlokas. There's 100%, there's an Isser of Chadash until the second day of Pesach passes. Sometimes people get confused. They have the attitude, oh, in Chutz La'aretz it was mutter, like why do I have to be stricter here? Now that may be true for a lot of things. Sometimes, you know, I mean, if you relied on the OU in America, you could probably rely on the OU here. I'm not saying that it's a psak. But something like Chadash, the halach is absolutely different. Whatever leniency there is in Chutz La'aretz does not apply in Eretz Yisrael. There absolutely is an Isser of Chadash. Yeah. Yep.
And it's not
Chadash.
Yep.
Can you eat it in Eretz? Yes. It's not a question of where you eat it. It's a question of where the grain grew. So that's a huge machlokas. But be it as it may, the concept is the barley harvest begins around Pesach time, or the month of Nisan, and the wheat harvest is a little later. The wheat harvest is around Shavuos, and that is why the korban that was brought on Shavuos was wheat. Now, Chazal give a deeper significance, just to digress. Chazal basically point out that barley, historically, was largely animal fodder. Although, you know, we eat it. And wheat was for human consumption. And the relationship is, Pesach, which is just freedom without Torah, we are still like wild animals. And only with Shavuos, Torah, do we now become human beings. Yeah.
So,
Well, in those days, you could. Well, no, barley is not Pythias. Barley actually is. But barley is one of the five species of grain. Barley is hummus. It's mamish hummus. Yeah, but once again, they have to be careful. You're 100% correct. They have to be careful that the barley did not ferment, like matzah. Right? Matzah is wheat.
Well, they didn't get it wet.
They baked it right away. Meaning they didn't allow it to become hummus. Yeah, but barley is not kidneys. Barley is actually potentially real hummus. Yeah.
You said that OU, for example, is not makdi. So when it says the lo hashash.
Oh, no, so it depends. No, if it says lo chashash...
Could you mean that it's because they're not makdil?
No. If they say lo chashash chadash, that means they're telling you it's fine. It's good. What I mean is, in America, when they certify a grain product in America, they will say that it's kosher, even if it's chadash.
But they never write...
No, but they don't write the lo chashash chadash. No, if they write the lo chashash chadash, then they're certifying that it's yasha. Which in Eretz Yisrael they must certify that. Yeah.
In Eretz Yisrael, the Rabbanan Rashi controls the entrance of wheat, even imported wheat, into the Israeli market for all the companies.
Yeah.
So any wheat product that's made in Eretz Yisrael is by facto is Yashan Hadash. For that time of the year. The only problem that you have if you're
mocked on it is only imported items that come in. Because then
you don't know. But there is in America, there's a Rabbi Yossi Herman
who produces
a booklet on all the dates when
that products
enter into the
Yashan Kaddish. Right. That's right.
And
yeah.
The access online.
That's correct. That's correct. It's a very, very good guide. It is online. It's I think it's from Lakewood. And it's a whole right.
You
let the
Yeah,
okay. And, it's very sophisticated, but if you can read, well, he'll tell you what exactly, but basically, the product codes that are on all sorts of things, whether it's crackers or spaghetti or cookies, if you read the product code, like you actually see, you know, when was the wheat harvested, when was it made, and then you can calculate Yashan Chadash based on that. But be it as it may, the point is this. The period, going back to the Pasuk, the period between Pesach and Shavuos is called overall the season of Katsir, because it starts with the barley harvest, the Aviv, and it ends with the wheat harvest. But after the Katsir, we then have the Kayetz. Now the Kayetz is when the grains and the fruits were left in the fields to dry out in the sun, because they still had a lot of moisture, and you really couldn't, you know, you couldn't harvest the grain then and just grind it into flour. You had to let it dry out in the fields, and that's why Sukkot, which is right before the rainy season, is called Chag HaOsif, the season of the ingathering, because you would then bring everything from outside into the house before the winter rains. So we really have three cycles in the harvesting of the produce. We have Katsir, we have Kayetz, and we have Asif. Now here, the activities of the ants are described in two ways. Tachin b'Kayetz lachma, it prepares in the summer, that's the later stage, it's lechem, it's bread, meaning it's sustenance. Ogra b'kotzir machala. Agra is gather, like lasof. Lagor is a synonym for lasof. Agra b'kotzir machala. So the Gra explains it again. I'm not sure what this corresponds to. I'm not an expert in ants, but the Gra says that in the kotzir, when the grain is ripening and ready to be harvested, the ants are just gathering the kernels. They don't process them. They just gather them. Their whole job is to schlep. They take and they bring and they bring and they bring and they bring. And then in the kayetz, once all the grain has been harvested, they then, by analogy, they somehow turn it into bread. Now, not bread mamish, but somehow they then undergo some type of processing
in which they make the food available. That's the difference between lechem and machal. Machal is the unprocessed raw material that you're going to make into your food. The lechem is the finished product. And therefore, he said, again, I just don't know what it corresponds to. With bees, we actually have a similar process like that, in which they convert, you know, nectar into honey and the like. With ants, I don't know what the analogous process is. But he says that there is a process of first gathering the raw material and then processing it into a food that can be eaten. Now, why is that detail important? I mean, it's enough, they're industrious, why do I need to know these two stages? So here the Vilna Gaon says a very interesting thought, a thought that is very relevant to students of yeshivas. So talk to your sons or husbands about this. And that is, he says, when a person is young, that is the time when their primary goal in Torah learning should be to amass a lot of knowledge, gather the grain. Don't spend so much time processing it. Now, those of you that have children in yeshivas know that one of the perennial controversies that have been going on really for hundreds and hundreds of years is the balance between amassing a lot of Torah knowledge, that's called bekiyus, and kind of taking a few lines and delving into it with all of the commentaries and all of the havana. And the derech of yeshivas generally is to learn relatively little, but do it with depth and understanding and the like. Because they basically say the only meaningful learning is a learning in depth and not a superficial learning. Well, the Vilna Gaon, who I think is entitled to have an opinion on the matter, the Vilna Gaon seems to differ a little bit. The Vilna Gaon says, when someone is young, now of course he doesn't define what we mean by young, but when one is in the, so to speak, summer of one's life, Kayetz is towards the end, but the Katsir is earlier. Your goal should be to learn a lot of information. First of all, when you're younger, your memory is better. There is no question. I think all of us are discovering this. And therefore, you're really in a good position to pick up a lot of knowledge. When you get older, it's just harder. It's harder to learn a new language. It's harder to remember things. On the other hand, the one thing that age has is, age does have, because of judgment, because of maturity, a better ability to appreciate interrelationships and connections and to analyze. So when you have like high school kids, you know, trying to parrot Rav Chaim Soloveitchik or Katsos or Nesivos or Rebbe Akiva Eger, you often encounter this phenomenon where the kids are saying the words and they feel very good that they're saying these words. But they often don't really understand what it is that they're saying. They may think they do, but they don't really. At least when you're older, you know you don't understand it. Maybe that's at least you could be honest that way. So the Vilna Gaon says this is the analogy. The ant first gathers and gathers and gathers kernels of grain, and that is, and it doesn't process it. It doesn't break it down into flour. It doesn't make it into bread. And only later, after it gathered so much, does it then grind it and turn it into edible bread. And therefore, the sequence of learning is, in one's younger years, one should emphasize acquiring knowledge. And then when you're older, you're ready to analyze it. First of all, obviously, you know, to try to analyze something in depth when you don't have a knowledge base is not going to be that productive either, because you might be coming to conclusions that are directly contradicted by a text, a Gemara, that you didn't even see. You see? So this is kind of the idea of chinuch, that the Gra advocates, the notion of amassing knowledge. And I want to say in this, he was not alone. Earlier, the Maharal of Prague, in a very, very interesting essay, was very, very critical of introducing younger children, like high school age, or no high school then, but whatever, that age children, to the in-depth analysis of Gemara before their minds were prepared for that type of analysis and before they had the knowledge base. And the Maharal of Prague points out that if you look at Chazal themselves laid out a sequence of building foundations of learning in a gradual way. When a child is 5, he begins to learn Chumash and does that for Tanakh for 5 years.
And then when they're 10, they begin with Mishnah. And they just do Mishnah for 5 years till they're 15. And they don't even begin the equivalent of Gemara until they've had 5 years totally devoted to the Torah Shebichtav and 5 years to the foundation of the Mishnah. And then they have a strong knowledge base. This is the Zilberman plan that is in place today. Essentially, it follows Pirkei Avos. The Maharal says we should still follow that, and the Gra seems to say it as well. Now, why doesn't everybody do it that way? I mean, what other than Zilberman? What yeshiva is not going to start teaching kids Gemara until they're 15 years old? Basically, that's you're not going to see that at all. Maybe in America sometimes, simply because...
There is.
The Zilberman, yeah, I understand. Zilberman as well. There are reasons. Some people do give excuses. They say, well, in the time of Chazal, you needed all of those years because the foundational texts were not written down. But now that everything's written down, so you could pick up the knowledge later. That's fine. But again, as I say, that's kind of a teretz after the fact. And the Gra B'Dafka says not that way. In the Gra's time, everything was written down. And the Gra talks about the importance of, and that's what he says, the famous Maimer Chazal, Im ein kemach ein Torah, Im ein Torah ein kemach. If there is no flour, there is no Torah. If there is no Torah, there is no flour. Now, the simple meaning, the Gra's has a chiddush here. The simple meaning is that kemach refers to economic activity. Having a job, making a parnasa. So it's saying, im ein kemach. If somebody does not have the ability to make a parnasa, then how are they going to learn Torah? They're going to starve. On the other hand, im ein Torah, if you make money and you don't devote it to learning Torah, then im ein Torah, ein kemach. What's the use of your parnasa? That's the simple meaning. Kamach is parnasa. But the Gra learns a different pshat. The Gra learns that Torah refers to raw information. And kamach is when you analyze the information by grinding it up in a fine powder. So when it says, im ein kamach ein Torah, meaning, if you never get to deeply analyze your thinking, then your Torah is just superficial. A person has to analyze. But im ein Torah ein kemach. If you don't have the basic knowledge, then your flour is not worth very much. Right? That's why a person has to build. So what is most appropriate depends on your age and your abilities at different stages of your life. And that's the significance of Tochin Bakayetz Lachma, Ogra Bakotzer Machola.
Yeah.
Say again? Yeah, why is it an opposite order? Yeah, so it seems to be that the reason we start with the later stage is because the later stage is the ultimate goal. The ultimate goal is to make bread. So that's right, same thing. That's exactly right, exactly the same. That could be why Chazal followed that order. It parallels the Pasuk. So now, we've been talking about ants, so now Shlomo HaMelech turns directly to the message, to his child, to us. Ad Mosai Otzel Tishkav. Until when will you, the lazy person, lie down in bed? Mosai Tokum Mishnasecha. When will you arise from your sleep? Now again, in the case of teenagers, sometimes it's quite literally, how long are they going to stay in bed? And this is true of sons and daughters. But in a more metaphorical way, the Rambam describes, when the Rambam talks about why we blow shofar in Rosh Hashanah, so the Rambam says a shofar is a wake-up call. It is an alarm to wake us up from the slumber of life in which we can go sleepwalking through life without thinking about, because we get so caught up in day-to-day activities that we don't always have thought about what is the ultimate goal to which I'm trying to move. And therefore the notion of getting up from sleep doesn't only refer to somebody sleeping late, but it refers to waking up as to what is important in life. Because ma'at sheinot, ma'at tenumot, ma'at chibuk yadayim lishkav, a little sleep, a little slumber. Again, the Gra differentiates, by the way, these terms. Sleep is when your mind is not active. So that refers to your mind is not thinking about Hashem. Tenuma is when you are awake, but your eyes are closed. So that means your mind is working, but you're not acting to serve Hashem. So Sheinot is the closure of the mind. Tenuma is the closure of your interaction with the world. Ma'at chibuk yadayim lishkan. Sometimes even if you are awake and you're conscious of everything, but you're kind of, you know, your hands are with you, you know, you're not doing. So what's going to happen with all of this? A little bit of too much sleep, too much slumber, too much chibuk yadayim. Uba kimahalech rei shecha. Your poverty will come like an unwanted visitor. Meaning quite literally, again, in lefi pshuto, laziness can mean you'll lose your business, but we are referring primarily to spirituality. And the Gra says that reishecha, the greatest poverty, is when a person does not know Torah. So these attributes of laziness mean a person will not learn Torah, and the Torah that he learned he will forget. So the reishecha, the poverty of lack of Torah knowledge, will be an unwanted visitor to your home. Umachsorcha, and your lacking will be keish magain, like a robber that comes to rob you. And the Gra basically explains, reishecha, poverty, is lack of Torah knowledge, and machsor is lack of mitzvos. That avera gereres avera, that when I develop a quality of laziness, eventually there'll be many, many mitzvos I won't bother to do. You know, why should I get up for minyan? Why should I do this? Why should I do that? Etc. And one day you'll just wake up and it's as if an invader has taken over your house. That's what it is. It's like these unwanted, that's how people sometimes describe internet and television and the like. They sometimes describe it as you have this unwanted guest that you invited like for a day or something, and they kind of, they don't leave, they just stick around and you can't get rid of them and the like. Well, this is kind of the attitude, that the laziness that a person develops eventually kind of takes over their whole personality, and then they look back at where they are and one might be very surprised and upset at how much ground we might have lost in the course of a year, right? So this is the important mussar. You know, we know, of course, we're in this man of burning chametz and eradicating chametz. And chametz is keneged, also the yetzer hara. It's arrogant, it's puffed up. But the Maral says, another reason why chametz is keneged the yetzer hara, besides the arrogant thing, which is the most familiar idea, is because chametz is a product of inertia. Because when water hits grain, you don't have to do anything to make it chametz. It becomes chametz by itself. Chametz is what happens by default. Matzah requires action. And one of the lessons of chametz and matzah is we cannot live life on automatic pilot. Automatic pilot creates that which is negative and no good. We have to take actual, decisive action. You know, there was a brilliant academic, Robert Hutchins, who was the president of the University of Chicago at a very young age. He was 25. He was younger than a lot of the graduate students. And a very, very brilliant person. He was once asked why he didn't take better physical care of himself. A jog, you know, do you ever want to exercise? So he said, every once in a while, I get the urge, but I know if I lie down for 2 minutes, it'll pass. So I don't let it bother me. And, you know, in that context, it certainly is true. But it's true in many, many other contexts as well. A person has, many times in the year, a person has his orus. Maybe after Ne'ila, a Chag, a Shabbos, a Chasna of a grandchild or a child. There are moments in which a person feels closeness to Hashem. But if you don't concretize it in an action, even if it's a small action, then the feeling passes. Inspirations go very, very, very quickly. Amazingly quickly.
You know, a person wants to hold on to a moment, but it doesn't last unless you do something with that moment. And that's really the lesson of chametz and matzah. Inertia, you just don't do something, it turns into chametz. Matzah is what you do. I'll just end with one final story, though, a beautiful story about the Lashon Hara. They tell the story about a Hasidic Rebbe who was doing Bedikas Chametz with his Talmidim, and the Bedikas Chametz lasted for many, many hours. And they were very happy they got all of the Chametz that they needed to get. But at the end of the Bedika, the Rebbe started crying, and the Rebbe pointed to his chest, and the Rebbe said, "And what do I do about searching the Chametz in here? The Chametz in here, I'm in big trouble." And the Talmidim told him, "Rebbe, don't worry about it. The Mishnah says in Maseches Pesachim, any place in which Chametz is not brought does not have to be searched." So he says, your heart is a place that no Chametz ever comes in. So therefore you don't have to worry. Well, that might, in Mitzvah Hashem, that should be true for all of us, but just in case, it's good to search and try to burn away whatever chametz that we can. So.